In music, we say that the minor key kind of evokes emotion, the longing, as we look forward to His return. Dear friends, who anticipate His coming, do you ever think that like a parent, God gets sick and tired of human beings, of us? Oh yeah, He may not have a body like we do. That makes Him more long-standing and patient. But there is always a time when judgment is right and perhaps we would say overdue. If you've ever watched Disney and the Pirates of the Caribbean, you probably know about islands that are filled with rum. One was called Port Royal. It is in the area of Jamaica. And while a lot of what is in the movie is fanciful and pretend, this island was not. It's got an interesting history. Port Royal was discovered by Columbus, that same Christopher Columbus, in 1792. And it's interesting the history prior to that. Port Royal, 1792, missed 200 years. I knew that wasn't right. I could hear that coming out of my... 1592. Okay. So the Spanish then claimed that island and made it a destination spot on the trade route where they could exchange. Ships could come in and get an exchange and go out. And it became a very healthy port. All the way until 1655. And that was when the English decided it was worth fighting for. They took over the island. But the governor knew he would have to commit a great deal of troops to keep it safe, to keep it English. So he came up with a plan that made Port Royal unique. He invited all of the pirates of the Caribbean to make their home there. And you know, pirates don't have a home. They don't usually expect people to invite them in. So when the governor says, come, they came in droves, and it became the second largest English colony. And with it came the rum. They say that for every 10 people that inhabited the island, there was one tavern. So a tavern with 10 people. In fact, they had so much of that partying going on that they said even the parrots in Port Royal got drunk. It was known for its brawling every day on the street. Sometimes would result in murder. So it was known as one of the richest and wildest, wickedest cities in the West. Until 1692. That was when an earthquake divided it into 12 sections, half of which went under water, and half of the inhabitants, thousands of people, died in that earthquake immediately on Port Royal. You wonder, don't you? Did God just finally get sick and tired of it? And then they tried to rebuild again and again. The people that were there ended up with a lot of disease and cholera because they couldn't bring in medical supplies. And over the next 200 years, though they tried to rebuild Port Royal, they never succeeded. It was hurricanes and raids. And then in 1907, it was like the coup d'etat. Another earthquake came, and along with it, a tsunami that covered the entire island. Now it's just a fishing village. Every now and then, some of the fleets will go in there just to see some historical stuff, but there's not much to see. Most of it is underwater. So was this really the Sodom of the New World? And does the name Sodom and Gomorrah ring a bell? It should from our text. An insert in the bulletin says what we're going to be studying here, that He is going to hide us in the day of danger. And you'll see our 2 points there based on Genesis 19, the Old Testament lesson. Life here can come to an abrupt end. Sodom was known for sexual sin. It has become a part of our English language, as a matter of fact. And it wasn't just that. It was everything along with it. Excessively arrogant people. Overfed, unconcerned about the welfare of their neighbor, unwilling to help the poor, stuck up, living detestable lives. Why would God destroy it so severely? That abrupt end. I had an interesting dialogue with one of our shut-in families this week. Tom and I go over to an accountant's office to visit Elaine. We give her Lord's Supper there. When I finished, her son Mark said, you got to hear the story about my car. Well, over the last 6-8 years, we've been talking about his VW wagon. He just was one of those guys that's meticulous. Now, I don't know whether I'd buy a VW, but I'd buy that car because he took care of it. I knew about its history. He and I would talk about it. I keep my eyes open for that kind of thing. Whew. Well, he gave it to his grandson when he got his truck. In fact, he charged him half of what it was worth. The young man thought that was kind of steep. I don't know what his figuring was. But what he didn't know was that Grandpa put in brand new airbags, brand new tires, brand new brakes. He made it completely safe. So when I was leaving, he said, you got to hear what happened to my car. 19-year-old grandson driving in the outside lane after dark. He said he was fiddling with the defroster, might have been looking somewhere else. And at that particular time, just prior, a neighbor who didn't have much room in his driveway decided to clean his garage and park his car in the lane of traffic in the dark. Sometimes when you hear this kind of stuff, you're like, really? The young man didn't even see it. He was looking down. He didn't brake. It took the police officers an hour to calm him down to get the story completely right, and they did not ticket him because they said he didn't see it. It was an accident. What also then became the story was that all of the airbags deployed, and the only thing that was wrong with him hitting a car parked at over 50 miles an hour was that he got some rash of a airbag hitting him. Completely safe because Grandpa had put him in a safe place, in a safe car, right? I hope you understand that you have a safe place in the midst of any danger, that Advent is a time where we learn about our refuge. How do we hide? And in this series, we're going to talk about how God takes us and protects us. People get consumed in this world by the eating and drinking, by the buying and selling. As you can well see every day in the ups and downs of the news around us. Unbiblical lifestyles may not be as prominent, you might say, as in Sodom, but then again, there are all kinds of things that are happening in our world that flood us with attack. Often it seems we can't get away from them. And what we need to hear is that no matter what the sin, no matter what the situation, no matter how horrible your present is, you will have a safe place where you can hide. Did you know that in that earthquake in 1792, they can actually tell the time that it occurred? Not by their scientific study of seismic waves, but that the invention of the pocket watch had already been made, and one of the pirates lost his pocket watch, which was crushed, except you could see the time, 11:32 a.m. That abruptly, the end came. And if you think about the way it was coming forward, the destruction is referred to many times in the New Testament. Don't be like Sodom and Gomorrah. In Luke 17, Jesus tells us what the people were doing, buying and selling. They were eating and drinking. They were planting and building. In other words, their lives were ticking along right until they weren't. And then he says, but the day Lot left Sodom, fire and sulfur rained down from heaven and destroyed them all. The point Jesus was making was not just the abrupt end, but that people didn't have the balance. They didn't see things the way God scores them. That God looks at other things like the human heart. And while we're so busy and the world is all engaged in Christmas, the getting, the buying, the selling, the having, that doesn't define who you are before God, does it? In fact, God had to command Lot to flee from a place where he had been doing all his eating and drinking. It was the only way he could save his life. And in 2 Peter, it says that God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah as an example of what would happen if wickedness breaks out, like Port Royal. Who knows? If you linger too long, you may pay the price. Archaeologists believe that they found Sodom and Gomorrah near to the south of the Dead Sea. And you know that's a place where nothing grows. It is the lowest place on earth. And why? Well, everything in that site is buried to 3 feet and deeper of debris. Did you know that there were survivors at Hiroshima and Nagasaki? But there were no survivors at Sodom and Gomorrah, except for Lot and his daughters. None. Every father that was at work was taken before he could get to his family. Every mother feeding her children. Every baby lying in a crib. Every teenager that was going to the store wiped out. Maybe you've seen the pictures of the horror at Pompeii. This was 10 times the extremity of that. Isn't it amazing how God had to tell Lot to flee? But he's not the only one. He says throughout Scripture, flee sexual immorality. Flee from idolatry. Flee from the love of money. Flee from the evil desires of youth. And when you're told to flee, it's not linger. It's not look back. It means run for your life. And thankfully, God has designed it into our very DNA and our chemical response that when we hear it, we're supposed to go. Except for Lot's wife. She thought that there would be an exception if she could just look back. Now, what was she so in love with back there that she had to risk it? Was it that she had spent all her time building a house, a home? That her kitchen was everything she wanted and she can't leave her kitchen? Was it her good friends that she just wondered if they were going to make it? Was it the stores, the mall, her shopping? Or maybe she was just curious. Have you ever watched people slow down on the highway, freeway, when there's an accident across over there? Oh, good grief. And so, when she turned, God had said, don't look back. And she became a part of eternity, judged, and turned into a pillar of salt as a memento that when God says flee, you should flee. You know, Lot escapes, but just barely. He is the picture, along with his daughters, of what we would call a reluctant believer, of somebody who's camped in the world, who hasn't got it all aware that their life is to the glory of God. And if you then trace his spiritual decline, you'll be ready for our second part, where it says God makes no distinction in his punishment. If you start, and there are clues here in Genesis, in chapter 13, Lot chooses the prosperous land down by the river, down by Sodom. Remember the bargain he struck with Abraham? Abraham went to the larger fields, the desert, and Lot went to the fertile valley. But did you know that by chapter 14, one chapter later, he's living in Sodom? And that by the early part of chapter 19, he's sitting in the gate. That means he's part of the leadership of Sodom. No wonder he had to be jerked away, pulled away, because he had invested himself in the city. And what is it, this thing that you are telling yourself you can't live without? What is it that turns your head away from God? When was the last time you said, I've got a good reason for this sin that I fall into, and you turned around like Lot's wife and you looked back? Part of Advent is preparing, not looking back, but looking forward to the return. Why did the Son come? And it is in the context of the baby that you see lying there in the manger that we understand his second coming. Lot fled from the destruction because he was pre-warned. I mean, that was really a measure of grace that God gave him. The measure was so great that the angels actually took him by hand and dragged him out. And then they said, go to the mountains, get there now. That's pretty impressive. Except that God's angels stood by and did not drag Jesus out of the Garden of Gethsemane, because he was in the pathway of the burning fire and sulfur of God's judgment. And it was because of your sins. It was because of mine. Jesus did not flee for the very opposite reason that Lot had to run, because he was pre-committed. He knew that this judgment would come on him and land on him. He let them arrest him. He grimaced and then grit his teeth as the nail went through his left hand, and then even worse, through his right hand. And can you imagine the pain of having both your feet spiked to the wood? But it was greater than that. It was the sulfur of the Father's silence that would come down on his head, on his scalp, on his heart. It would burn inside of Jesus that God should treat him so when he was the perfect Son. And even in the midst of that, he opens his mouth, and instead of reviling and rebelling, Jesus says, Father, forgive them. That's why you know it's real, is because there is the love of God in evidence. Even as judgment is raining down on him, he is taking our place. You can't go back. You can't look back, and you can't change things. There are some things that happen to us in our life that we wished we could go back and make right. God won't let you. Did you know that one of the survivors at Hiroshima was named Mitsuo? She actually is the wild exception, like Lot. She had her foot on the streetcar, was about to enter the same streetcar she went to work in every day, just a mile or two away from where the epicenter of the nuclear head hit. Except that she stopped that day and said, I've got some papers, I'll go back. She turned around, ran back home, took her over 15 minutes. She was waiting for another streetcar when the actual deployment occurred, and thousands were killed instantly. All of the people on the streetcar where she should have been. The only thing she had was a burn on the back of her neck. Amazingly, she lived for 20 more years, spared. Have you realized or thought why it is that God gives us another dose of his grace? It might be because we are tempted to look back and think that we could make it better, but we can't. That's his job. Or it might be that we have that regret, those awful regrets that we live with. We look back on the choices we made and the consequences. We wish we could have changed it all, but that is a dangerous game to play. Are we insensitive to the destruction? One writer, a Christian author, said, in our members there is a slumbering inclination towards desire, which is both sudden and fierce. With irresistible power, desire seizes mastery over the flesh. All at once a secret smoldering fire is kindled. The flesh burns and is in flames. It makes no difference whether it is sexual desire or ambition or vanity or desire for revenge, or love of fame and power, or greed for money. Finally, the strange desire for the beauty of this world captivates the heart. Joy in God is extinguished in us. We seek all our joy in the creation and the creature. At this moment, God is quite unreal to us. He loses all reality, and only desire of the creature is real. We are filled not with hatred of God, but with forgetfulness of God. What a close call for Lot. Man, by the absolute merciful grace of God, he and his daughters were given many years beyond because of the prayer of Abraham, his uncle. And you know, we are to forget what is behind and look forward to what is ahead, says Paul. Jesus says it in our gospel. He says, when these things occur, lift up your heads, because your redemption, you're being bought out of slavery to sin, is coming. It's coming. And in the titling of this series for the Sundays, I chose from Psalm 17 the word apple of his eye. Show me the wonders of your great love, you who save by your right hand those who take refuge in you from their foes. Keep me as the apple of your eye. Hide me in the shadow of your wings from the wicked who are out to destroy me, from my mortal enemies who surround me. The king who came in a lowly manger stall will come again. Part of Advent is to prepare our hearts that when we celebrate his first coming, we know about his second, and we are just as ready as when the angels grabbed onto Lot and said, "Go now." For this is what Advent means. Amen.